welcome to class today. Before we get to the subject matter for the day, are there any things that anybody would like me to address? Yes. Sorry? Where should you start in the homework? In the same room as your partner. That isn't what you asked, though, is it? Where should you start in the homework? I would suggest you start by solving little pieces of the problem by itself. So try taking the code we give you and just making the picture of the bird move, or just making two pictures of a bird. Make lots of these little programs until you know how the pieces work, and then try to put them together. Anything else anybody would like me to address? So today we're going to talk about this diagram. This is one of my favorite flowcharts. Okay, most code is bad code. And we're going to talk about why most code is bad code, how you can always interpret a piece of code as being bad in some way, and then we're going to talk about how you use this to change how you write code, and we're going to play around with some robots counting rooms like we did in the beginning of the semester as well. So, when you try to write code, you always get it wrong, and part of the reason is because there's lots of definitions of wrong, and you'll always fail on at least one of them. So let's actually start with an example. We're going to start with a simple example. I want to swap the values of the x and y variable. That's all I want to do. Just swap what values in x, what values in y. I want to do this without explicitly referring to their values. I don't want to write 11, 10, or 218 again. Okay, I just want to swap what's in the two variables. Anybody have a way of doing that? And kudos if you make a bad solution. Yes? Something to hold the value of x. Okay. Okay.
No, you would set x is equal to y first.
I would set x is equal to y first.
No, I think
in between those two. Alright, so here we have a way of swapping the values. Let's see if it works. Before I run it, this will work. Wow, one, two brave souls thinks this will work. And it so doesn't work. Why not? Why are they both 218? Yes? Oh, so set the first thing into something to hold the value of x. Ha! Now I got it. Hooray! We swapped the two values. Okay. Here's a way of swapping values in variables. There are lots of ways of doing this. We'll see several more. But before we do that, let's just get a quick poll. I like that code. I don't like that code. Wow, most of you like it. Isn't that nice? In what ways is this good or bad? What do we think? Anything we can say about this code? Ways we can improve it? Ways it's great? Yes. It's a lot of typing. Okay, so we've got bad. A lot of typing. Yes. Bad. Wastes memory. What is that? What do you mean by that?
I mean, if you have, a program that's dealing with a lot of memory and you need to watch it.
So it's the extra variable? Is that the problem? Okay. Yeah.
Good, it achieves the goal.
Good. It works. Hooray! We like it when code works. Anything else we can say about this, good or bad? Yes?
It's good that it's easy enough to follow.
Good. I like the way you say that. Easy enough to follow. Okay. Does that mean it's easy to follow? Who knows? But it's easy enough. All right. What's something we could do to make it better? Anything that can make it better? Let's take this first one. Lots of typing. How can we reduce the amount of typing? We change the variable name. What should we change it to? Z. All right. Z. Still works. Less typing. Yes?
You can make a method that does that.
I cannot make a method that does that. Why can I not make... So this has come up several times. Why can I not make a method to do this? Yes?
I think it's a problem with scope.
It's similar to scope. It actually has to do with how we get parameters in, right? So if I make a method, a public void swap method that takes two ints, okay? Wow, I really can't type today. My fingers just be in the wrong place. And I just put this code in it, okay? Which x is it swapping? It is swapping the x and y of its parameters, not its arguments. So if I were down here to call, let's do this, let's say swap xy and print it out again, okay, so it should swap them back, but it will not. I just, public, thank you, static void, and I need to give it a name. Okay, so I make it a method, I invoke the method, and it doesn't do anything. Or it doesn't do anything in to main's variable. Swapping variables, something can only happen in the code that has the variables. The x and y I want to swap are main's x and y. Those are different from swap's x and y. And there is no way of making them not different from swap's x and y. Java always just puts the value of the arguments up into the parameters. It's not talking about the variable, it's talking about the value that was in the box. So I can write the method, and the method works internally, but it doesn't change anything in main. Okay? So, this version where we use z instead of something to hold x in, I think it's better. I think it's worse. I don't care. Alright, most of you don't care. I think it's better. I think it's worse. Yes? You can't tell what it's doing. What does Z mean? I have no idea. I look at line 18 and it has no meaning to me. None at all. Okay? I can make better names than either of these. How about old X value? Now this has meaning. Now this says that I'm putting into Y the old X value. Okay? It's clearer. It's easier to read. It's easier to see if I did it right, because the meaning is right there in the code. I don't have to look at three lines to figure out the purpose. I can look at one line and figure out what's going on. Okay? I can make this even clearer at the cost of all kinds of other things. I can add an old y value as well. Now adding the old y value, it's yet another variable, so we're wasting even more memory. It's more typing, but it's a little easier to follow still. It's symmetric. We now see that it doesn't really matter whether we assigned x or y first. We're just saving both the old values and we're swapping them over into the new values. Okay? Do we need them both? No. But it is, at some level, a little bit more efficient to do that one. Sorry, a little bit easier to read one of them than the other. Okay. So let's just sort of... Okay, when we can compare the one that has old y and old x, it's symmetric. When we compare the other one, it isn't. They both work just fine. There's nothing wrong with either one of them. Except that one of them is easier to read than the other. Okay. So somebody said an extra variable, that's so sad. Can we do it without the extra variable? It turns out we can. We're going to swap x and y without using any third variable at all. Okay? So, this is kind of weird. We're going to do x minus equals y. So now x holds x minus y. Okay? Then I'm going to say y plus equals x. Which means y now holds... y plus x minus y, which is the same thing as x. So now I've put the old x value into y, and now I do this fancy magic at the end. X equals y minus x. Okay, just to complete the magic. So now x holds, it holds x minus the x minus y, which is going to be equal to y.
So weird.
And it swaps the values. And I use no extra variables. And I wrote less code than any of the other versions. And there's no temporary variables. I don't have to think of a name. It'll actually run slightly faster than the other ones because creating variables takes time. Right? So, how many of you think that this third version is better than either of the other two? Nope, I think it's worse. Most of you think it's worse. Most sane people should think it's worse. What is wrong with this method? So good. It's fast. No extra variables. Bad. Oh, and little typing. What's wrong with it? Most of you didn't like it. What's wrong? Yes. It is hard to read. Other things is bad? Yeah.
Not very straightforward.
Not straightforward. I'm going to word that slightly differently as well. Confusing. Okay. How likely am I to get those tiny lines of code wrong compared to the earlier lines? I look at that and I say, should it be y minus x or x minus y? And until I write out the comments and figure out, okay, what's in every variable, I have no idea, right? Even with just, what's the total character count here? 6, 12. So we're sitting right around 20 total characters, and I've already made something that's hard to understand if it works or not. Okay? Now, there actually is, incidentally, this is somewhat of a side note, but there are code obfuscation contests where the goal is to make the smallest piece of code as hard to understand as possible. But this is not one of those. Okay, so we got different ways of swapping variables. As we're thinking about these, we can think about sort of four ways that a variable could be good or bad. Okay, our code could be good or bad. And I'm going to call them speed sub 1, speed sub 2, clarity and correctness. Speed sub 1, it runs fast. Okay, the code doesn't take long to run. This is one of the most common things people will talk about, how long does it take to run. It's important to think here, though, almost all code runs fast. Computers do billions of things a second, billions with a B. It's a lot of things. It is really hard to make code that is slower than a human. It can be done, we'll see some later today, but it's hard to do. Okay? That's one kind of speed. Another kind of speed is how long it takes you to write it as a programmer. Okay? So some programs can be written in seconds, and others take years. So we have that other kind of speed, the programmer speed versus the program speed. Okay? Then we have clarity. Some code is confusing, and some code is really confusing. Eventually, you'll see enough code that some of it will start being sensible or clear to you. But initially, it all starts off confusing, and you can make some really, really confusing code without too much effort. And then we have correctness. Some code is good enough, and some code is almost right. There is code that is actually truly right. The swap methods we just wrote, for example, are actually truly right. But showing that your code is actually truly right in all cases is really hard. It takes years of effort, lots of advanced training. So almost all programs of any significant size are somewhere between good enough and almost right. And they have problems. We talked about some of those last time when we talked about programs crashing and so on. And so we've sort of got these four axes of which we can measure the goodness of a program or compare two programs, which one's better. And one of the things we'll find is that pretty much universally, you cannot maximize all four of these. Take any two pieces of code, and you can argue that either one is better most of the time, in one of these axes, or at the very least you can come up with one that is better than the one you're looking at right now in at least one of these things. You can always make it faster if you make it more confusing. You can always write it quicker if you make it less efficient. You can always make it more confusing, period. Right? So there's different ways of trading off between these. And picking the right balance is something of an art. We can give you guidelines and pointers, and I'll try to give you some guidelines and pointers that'll help you with what you're doing right now. But there's some amount of you go with your gut. And you'll hear programmers talking about elegant code, which just sort of means that, isn't this pretty? And they don't really know what they mean. It's kind of efficient and it's kind of easy to read, and we're all happy. So we'll see a little bit kind of what that means. There's disagreements about what it means. Well, we've got these four ways to measure code. Any questions to this point? Other kinds of swaps you want me to talk about? Or anything like that? Okay, then we are now going to go back to this world. We've seen this world before in Lab 2. A grid of rooms with a robot trying to count the rooms. Is there anybody who wants me to remind you how this world works? Okay, so we're going to play with this world, and we're going to use this to explore different goodnesses of code. Okay? So, here's the world I want. I have added a little bit of code. You can get it from lecture notes, so you can actually play with it and see what happens when you ask a robot to do stuff. So I made a robot in a 4x4 room, and I am now going to write the simplest correct solution I think you can do. Robot dot say 16. Pop! All right, now there's some things to say about this room. Okay. First thing to note is I came up with a visualization in a few minutes last night, and so instead of looking like a bunch of rooms, it sort of looks like a psychedelic checkerboard. Sorry about that. But there was a psychedelic checkerboard. I've got the traditional neon eggplant, sandy, and walnut directions, okay? And I've got a robot sitting here. It doesn't look much like a robot, but again, you know, a few minutes last night. And the robot says 16. Is that the correct answer?
Yes.
Yes! Could I make any simpler code? No. Can I make any faster code? No. I have managed to maximize just about every possible measure. It's 100% correct. It takes almost no time. It takes almost no code. It took almost no time to write it. This is the perfect solution. Okay? I like this solution. Come on, I just told you it's perfect. Okay. What's wrong with it? Most of you didn't like this solution, so what? Either there is no such thing as a good solution, or we can do better. So what's wrong with this solution? Yes?
I guess the rooms, number of rooms change.
Oh! So there's a word for that. We call this version is brittle. Brittle! Brittle is used for different purposes in computing, but one of them means, it always means it's not flexible. It does not adapt well to new situations. In particular, this code just so fails if I have a 5x5 room. Like, it just doesn't even come close. Right? Immediately, it doesn't come close. It does not scale well to other kinds of problems. So, not a good solution. What can we do better? Clearly, we can. How do we do better? Anybody want to give me a brief outline of a solution that will count a 5x5 room as well as a 4x4 room? Yes?
You just say like int a is equal to 5, and then put robot AA.
Ah. Okay, so we're going to say make the room, and then we do robot.say
a
times a. All right. Ha, I got 25. Isn't that amazing? And does it still work for 4x4? It does. 16. We're doing good. We're doing good. Can it do 21x21?
No.
Yes, it can. Look at that. All right. Hooray. We have the universal solution. It's barely more expensive than the last one. One extra multiply, one extra variable. Almost as good. Yes.
What if you want two different values, not just 5x5x5x8?
Oh, great, two different values. All right, let's do that. All right, let's make another int b equals 8, because we went 5x8, right? Okay, a and b A and B. 40. Magic. All right, we've got an even more general. We could do all squares and rectangles. Can we do any better? Is there anything left to do, or have we just solved the entire world? Yes?
What if the group's not a square or a rectangle?
What if it's not a square or a rectangle? Okay, let's make a non-square or rectangle room. Okay, here is a non-square or rectangle room. Let's make a nicer looking one. Here we go. Here's a room with a whole few holes in it. And it thinks this is 40 big. And it's so not 40 big. Okay. So, the problem here is not that this doesn't work for non-rectangles. We'll get to the non-rectangles in a moment. The problem here is it's not actually solving the problem we asked for. Okay? So even if I go back to the 4x4 case, okay? The robot is not computing anything. The problem statement says the robot is dropped into a corner of the room and it doesn't know how many rooms there are. And we just said, yes, it does. Ha ha. Tricked you. Right? The robot does not know how many rooms there are. We cannot use that. In general, the way the problem is worded, the robot only knows about the room it is in. And magically telling it the answer, may make the robot happy, but it doesn't solve the problem. Okay, so how can we solve the problem without taking advantage of the fact we know how many rooms there are? You've all done this. Somebody give me the outline of how you do it. Anyone? Yes. Or is that not a hand? Yes, just the outline will be fine. What do you do?
We need to have a counter.
We need a counter. What does it start at? We'll come back to that later.
We need to be able to make the robot to move.
We need the robot to move. Great.
There's no way it should stop.
Know when to stop. All right, let's start this first off. All right, there our robot moves. Okay, so we're doing all right. We need to know when to stop. When do we stop?
When we count to 1.
All right, so while the robot has checked the east direction, while there's not a wall there, then the robot's going to go in the eggplant direction. Okay, remember the robot could do two things. It could check and it could go. Oh, and then at the end we need the robot to say something, right? So we'll have it say counter rooms. Oops. Counter. Zero rooms. What's missing? Counter plus equals 1. And we want the square, right?
Yeah. We have it set at
1. 9 rooms.
Counting.
All right, what's it actually counting? It's counting time times it changes rooms. So it goes from a room to a room 3 times for a total of 4 rooms it's visited. So we need to start the counter off 1 higher. And I've got way too many of these sitting up. Let me close some of them. Okay. All right, so now it moves over there. 16 rooms. We have the robot working. Now, I said this is better, it solves the problem, but let me comment here. Sometimes robot.say16 is good enough. Okay? When you're solving a problem, you don't always have to solve the problem. If you know the answer, you can just use the answer. Right? If you're writing a program that needs to, I don't know, use the acceleration of gravity, you're welcome to write into your program an algorithm for determining the acceleration of gravity based on a number of accelerometer readings. Or you could just say, I know it's 9.8 meters per second. Ta-da! And you're done. right? And so you don't always need to do the extra work. But we have this method. Now, we've talked earlier about how this method doesn't work if we make things of different sizes, right? So this does not work if we have a 4x5 room. It still thinks it's 4x4 because it's only going one direction. Okay. So what do we do to fix that? We make it go down. Before or after it goes right? After it goes right. Okay, so go in the sandy direction. I need a new counter, which will also start off at 1, and we'll increment it instead, and we'll multiply them. Hooray! And here goes our robot. 20 rooms! Okay. Now, this method is bigger. It takes a little bit longer to code than the other one. It takes a fair amount longer to read because you have to spend the time figuring out what it's doing. There's twice as much code to look at. How long does it take to run? If the number of rooms is, say, 100, how long will this take to run? How many rooms will it visit? If there are 100 rooms in total, it will visit more than 100 rooms. It will visit at least 100 rooms. It'll visit somewhere between 50 and 100 rooms. Between 10 and 50. Less than... All right, so we all think it'll be between 10 and 50. Let's find out. Pum, pum, pum. It'll show up eventually, trust me. All right, so here comes the robot. We have this 100 by 1 room. Dun, 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 dun. And eventually it'll show up, and then it'll pass by and keep going. So how long does it actually take? Right? The time that this method takes is the width plus the height. Okay? Just straight up the width plus the height times however long it takes to move from room to room. It still hasn't shown up. Maybe we should make a slightly smaller room? What do we think? Let's make a slightly smaller room. How about if we make it 30 by 1? Still bigger than the screen, which I think only holds 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. But it should show up here. Oh, there it goes. Here comes our robot, gainfully counting along. And there it goes again. And then eventually it should pop up that there's been 30 rooms. Ta-da! All right. So, we have this method, and the time that this, the speed sub 1, the runtime, if you will, the runtime is width plus height, or approximately width plus height. Okay? Now, we've got this. This is great. The old one was just width. If it was a square, that was faster. Half as slow, right? Twice as fast. And we can optimize that. Can we make this clearer? Is there something we could do to make this easier to read? We might be able to like rename counter 1, counter and counter 2 to be some slightly more meaningful names. But basically this works. Now, I'm going to make a completely different... Let's make a different room here. Let's go back to a weird looking room. The old one finally finished. Okay. All right, so here is my room, and there are obviously 6 rooms in it, right? So as our rooms get weird, this method doesn't work. Okay? So we have a method, the square rectangle method is more effective than the square one, but it still doesn't work in all cases. And making one that works in all cases, making one that's more correct, more flexible, able to do more things, is going to cost us something. It will cost us the time it takes to run. It will cost us the readability of the code. It'll cost us the time we spend writing the code. There's lots of things it might cost us. So, anybody have an idea how I can make a program that will work for this room? or even a piece? What's something we'll probably need to do? We'll probably need to check rooms. Why don't you actually turn to whoever's sitting near you? Come up with some pieces that you think you will need to see in a solution to this problem. How do you look out in these rooms? Come up with some pieces that you think will be involved. Take a moment to do that, then we'll come back together. Okay. Let's just get some pieces that we think might be useful. Okay? What's a piece that you think might be useful in this solution? Anyone? Yes. Check all directions. That's it. We had checking all directions and we're done. Yes?
Have a direction that you want to go if it's available, like a priority.
So we're going to have some sort of priority list of directions. Okay? What else? Come on, you were all talking. I heard some interesting ideas in passing. Volunteer them. Yes?
Switch to stop counting if you don't want to count a room.
So we have to somehow know, when would we not want to count a room?
We've already counted it.
So we have to know what rooms we already counted. Why do we need to know that? Why do we need to know what rooms we've already counted? If you think about this room here, in order to visit all of the rooms and find out which ones they are, you will have to pass through some of them twice. Either this one you'll have to go down and back, or this one you'll have to go down and back. That will have to happen. You will have to pass through this room more than once to get in there and come back out, right? So you've got to know, is this the first time I've seen the room or not? So you have to keep track of what rooms you've seen. Anything else? Okay, I'm going to show you. There's a couple of different solutions to this on the lecture notes. I'm going to grab one. Let's grab this one right here. Okay. And we'll talk about what it does here in just a moment. Okay. So, here we have... I do have a list of places I've been. Okay. We said we needed a list of places we've been. I've got a list of places we've been. And then what the rest of this is doing is the core of this, the real trick here is right here. Okay? I am generating a random direction. And I'm going that way if I can. That's it. The whole method is go in a random direction and remember where I am. So here's some extra code to say, let's start somewhere. I picked completely random numbers for the starting location. There's nothing magic at 132 and negative 11. It's just sort of the label for the room. We could pick any numbers you want here. Okay? I say that's the room I start in. When I move, I change what room I think I am in. And again, it's sort of random whether I decide NS or Y or X, whether I think they're plus or minus. I just pick something. So I have a label for each room. I make a string for that room, and if it's not there, I count it, and I say, I found this many rooms so far. But at the core of it is just make a random direction and try that direction. Keep track of how many I've seen. So let's see what this does. One room so far, good. Two rooms, good, good. Three rooms, all right, we're making progress of a sort. Well, sometimes dice are not in our favor. But it'll get out of there eventually. It has to, right? It's random, it'll eventually do everything. We're just patient, really patient. Yes, four rooms, way to go, robot. Five, you're doing so well. No. You can do it. Go east, go eggplant. You can do it. Yes, six rooms. You're doing so well. Seven. Wow, look at this progress. Yes, it's looking almost clever. All right, we've only got three rooms to go. How long do you think it'll be before it finds them? Nope. Oh, so close. All right, well, while it's bumbling around, hey, let's talk about this code a bit. So this code is really pretty simple. Random, we understand random. Yes. We understand random, we understand counters, right? We understand knowing what cell you're in, we understand strings and lists. There's not much difficult things in this code. And it will eventually succeed. It will eventually see every room, okay? How long will it take? Well, we can make a probability, we can make a distribution of how long it will likely take given the complexity of the room or so on. It might take forever, right? Random means it is not guaranteed to ever generate something. It may just always do the same thing. But in general, we can write some sort of expression that represents how long we think it will take to go where it's going. Yes. Much of the same sort of entertainment you get watching hamsters, right? They just bumble around at random. Anyway, all right. So, we can do this. This code, what is the main problem with this code? There's one thing it's doing poorly. It is?
Keeping track of where it's been.
It knows exactly where it's been. Not backtracking. Okay, it has to backtrack. We just said there's some cells it has to visit twice. Yeah.
Runtime is really slow.
It is really slow. How many rooms are there actually in this grid? Do we know? 18? Is that what we think? Something along that we can count, right? 5, 8, 10, 12, 14, 15. No, that can't be right. 6, 7, 10, 15. That's what I'm getting. Am I wrong? Okay. So that's how many there are. How long would it have taken even our stupidest one before this to find 15 rooms? A few seconds, right? It takes about a second for it to move from one room to another on average. Depends on how many rooms it checks around it. And this has been running for now 4 minutes and still has a room to go. And who knows how much longer it will take, right? So it's a really slow solution. But it is really simple code compared to a way that does this correctly. So let me now show you a way that does this correctly. We'll actually leave this running in the background just to see if it ever goes away. Yes?
What is the point of the while true part of the code?
Ah, good question. I'll come to that in a moment. What's your question?
Will it stop when it gets to 15?
Ah, so they're both the same question. Does the robot ever know that it's done?
Yes!
It knows how many rooms there are, but does it know that it's finished? Nope. Because it is not keeping track of the rooms it hasn't seen. It's only keeping track of the rooms it has. And it has no idea if by bumbling around at random it'll find yet another little corner. It just doesn't know. So this program is never done. It never knows it is completed. We could stop it at some point and say, it's seen 14 rooms, that must be the number. But we may stop it early. We don't know because the program does not keep track of everything it needs to keep track of to know that it is finished. So what is the runtime of this method? Infinite. By definition, it never knows it's done. It just keeps going. Okay? So if we wanted it to know that it's done, we would have to keep track of where it hasn't been as well as where it has. Right? We have to know not only what rooms have we seen, but what doors have we not followed. And when that list of doors we have not followed gets empty, we are done. So we can go down to this next one. Okay. All right, so let me dump in this next one. It's a bit longer. It's almost 100 lines. I'm actually storing three things in this one. I'm storing the rooms I've seen. I'm storing the rooms the doors I haven't been through. And I also have this special trail so that I don't have to bumble around at random. I can back up intelligently. But let's see what the robot does. Okay, it wanders around. It may not be immediately obvious why it's going the path it is. It's just how I told the code to. And then backs up and tries something it didn't try. And then backs up and tries something it didn't try. And does that again. And it knows it's done. Okay? Hooray! Visits every room. Okay. This is not as fast as it could be. We could make a faster one, but it's pretty close. Okay? It usually will visit no more than each room twice in this particular implementation. You can make one that visits no room more than once, but this does about twice that fast. So what's the idea? We know where we've been, how we got here, so we can back up when we get to a dead end. We know the rooms we've seen. We know the doors we haven't followed. We know where we are, just like before. We say we're already where we start, and we check all of the doors. And if they're not there, we add that we know that room exists, and we know that door is something we need to follow. Okay? And then, as long as there's doors we haven't followed, we're going to grab one of those doors and figure out what room it says we need to go to. We're going to back up along the trail until we get to that room. Okay? So there's some weird code here for backing up along a trail. We're then going to go through that door and check all of its doors. And then we're going to... Oh, this is weird. Okay, that didn't come out correctly. So we're going to go back through that door, and then we're going to check all of the other doors and add them to our lists, only if we haven't already been through that door. And then when we're finally done, we just say how many rooms there were. Okay? Now, the random one, once you understood random motion was happening, it was pretty obvious what it was doing. There wasn't a lot that could go wrong. This code, even though we're only really, what, from line 8 to line 86, so about 70 lines, some of those are comments, it is still true that the first time I wrote this code, I had literally just two characters wrong. Let's see what happens if I have two characters wrong. At first, it's just sort of wandering back and forth. And I don't know why it's wandering back and forth, but there it is, wandering back and forth, and eventually it just gets stuck. And it'll do this forever. Okay? So the first time I wrote this code, this is what happened. And it took me a while to figure it out, because there's nothing obvious in what it's doing that tells me what went wrong. Right? The behavior does not tell me what went wrong. It's only 70 lines of code. I have written programs that are close to 100 lines of code in my life. And yet, already, by getting more than a screen, getting more than what I can fit in my head at one time, debugging this was not obvious. And I used, you know, sort of tracked what was happening, and eventually I found my typo and changed my X's to Y's, and then it worked just fine, okay? Instead of running forever. So, take home message from that. Getting a method that is efficient and versatile usually means you sacrifice the speed at which you write it and the ease with which you can interface with the code. Okay? And so what you want to do when you're designing code of any reasonable size, more than 10 lines, let's say, is you want to make it in little pieces and try out those pieces one at a time. Right? So how do you write a method like this? You can sit down and write the whole thing, but you could also say, okay, let's take one piece. Can I keep track of the rooms? Do I know what room I'm in? So we did that sort of with the random, right? Then we can add one more piece at a time. Can I keep track of doors? Can I keep track of how many doors I haven't seen? Can I figure out where I've been? Can I figure out how to back up? If we do these things one at a time, we can build our solution smoothly to get to something that's efficient and versatile without it also breaking. But if you try to go for the big thing all at once, you'll end up almost invariably sacrificing the ability to understand your code, right? It'll end up really confusing. So, in practice, as you're writing code, start small, test often, break it into little pieces and see if they work. When it doesn't work, see if you can pull out a piece and see if that piece works by itself to isolate the problem, to narrow it down. All right, questions, comments, concerns, thoughts about our experiments with grids? Okay. When we come back on Friday, we'll talk about a even simpler problem and how this impacts how we write code. We'll get back to some coding from there. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and or not wonderful 2 days. I will see you on Friday.